Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Art and Labor. I am OK Fox.
And I am Lucia Love, and I've got news.
I'm so excited to hear this. I do not know ahead of time what this is.
OK, so I started watching One Piece.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Really?
Yeah. And I'm like obsessed.
Shit, dude.
Yeah, it took a long time because I'm such a working schlub, but I just wanted to tell you.
That's crazy. What an literal adventure you're about to go on.
There's so much. There's just so, it's so like, I was like, where's this going? And then I was like, whoa.
It's like a very like integrated part of my life. I literally read and watched it every week since I was like 15.
Yeah, I'm like I'm really, I feel like I had, that's what I had to tell you.
Yeah, like, that's so awesome. You, and you like it, the because some people get like they're the, because the way that the early seasons are animated is kind of like, like people are turned off by it. I mean, I feel like you're not that type of person who's like very, I don't know. There's a lot of people who are like, get weird watching older stuff, but
oh, no.
I think it's fine, but
actually the animation was something that I was kind of like focusing on. 'Cause for me, it's like, I don't know, the audio is a little bit much, but I've like already, I got past it.
Are you watching subs or dubs? That's important.
Okay, so I'm watching
you're watching the dub because you're
watching,
doing, yeah,
I'm watching
you're
dubs
painting
because I'm,
no,
yeah,
that's fine. I think that makes a lot of sense to do, and it's like a huge show, so it's not something that you really on it. I don't really recommend people like
I know it's, you know? It's like the less real way to watch it, and I know that, so everybody can just be like, oh, you, that's disappointing, but I'm
no
there,
but it's,
I'm
like, I don't, I also, I honestly, I don't recommend people watch the fucking subtitles at this point, because there's like 600 episodes, and it's like you can't unless like you're, yeah, only watching, unless you're only watching like a little bit at a time and you don't care that it's going to take your whole life to finish it. But it's like, I recommend people read the manga is most, because it's like faster and the, you know, more legit. And then, I don't know, maybe when you get late, like later in the series, and there's like episodes that you really like, watch the subtitles just to get a sense of like how much better acted it is, but
oh, totally. No, I was feeling that. I was like, I'm definitely not getting the entirety of the experience, but I was like, you know, I'm not gonna let my whole life go by without understanding what this is about.
It is so huge too. What I really love about One Piece is how it's like the most popular like anime manga ever.
Yeah.
Which is really crazy to think about, like, in like across the world, like people watch it. Like there's like really like cute clips of like different soccer teams from around the world, like playing Japan and like singing the One Piece theme.
Cause
like,
oh,
that's like their cultural reference point for Japan. But I think it's like sweet. Like everyone, like all nerds around the world know One Piece. It's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, I had known One Piece, like some blanket things about it, and I would see like when I was driving the truck and going into all of the service entries, like I would see One Piece stickers in the freight elevators and stuff, and I would be like, whoa, like, oh god, I gotta get there, I just gotta get there.
Yeah, you gotta give it a shot at least. Like I think it's gonna be a really nice thing to watch while you're painting. I don't know how long the dubs go though. That's the other thing. It's so popular, it must have a full dub at this point.
I mean, so far, so the dubs, there's like 240 episodes, I guess, of dubs.
I'm sure there's more. They're probably working on it, because it is like so popular, and like
it, yeah,
it, they'll get it eventually. But then it's also like, yeah, you could always like, you could switch to reading it. It's also, that's a lot. That's a big commitment too. I don't know. I read a lot before I go to bed of manga because it's relaxing.
Oh yeah, definitely. But I don't know. I want to circle back to the animation style because I was thinking about how old traditional animation worked and how much I just like actually love it because of the way that you have to find like the path to visual storytelling without putting a lot of effort into it.
They don't have like, a huge budget.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a huge budget. And it's all like you're just doing it with your hands. So it's like the way that they find they're like I've watched up to the part where there's like the cat themed pirates.
Okay, yeah.
And they're like gonna ambush this town, and there's like one of the pirates has like super fast little agile pussyfoot abilities. They call it pussyfoot ability.
But there's a lot like, of puns in One Piece of the different attacks and things.
But then I get such a kick out of it because it's like, how do you show that the guy is really agile, and then they just close up on his feet and they just put a foot and then like it disappears and they put the foot somewhere else. But like, oh, that's totally what I would do if I was animating this. I'd be like, you get the idea.
Yeah, like move fast. It's like the teleporting in DBZ too.
So. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you didn't even see it because now it's over there, and everyone's like, oh, what a jip.
You'll also watch as you, if you watch more, like it gets more budget as it goes on, and then it changes styles. Pretty significantly.
Oh, I'll be sad then. I really like this janky stuff actually.
It gets less janky, the animation, but like, and it's there's so many episodes, they still like, there's definitely like, you can tell like even when they do get a budget, there are certain episodes they spend the budget on more than others. Like, you know, because so
the
much
big pirate battles.
Yeah, the big battles, they're gonna do more. Also, like the original One Piece dub is notorious. Like, when if you grew up as an anime fan and a One Piece fan, you know it was a real struggle to like convince people that One Piece was actually good, because like notoriously, 4Kids, which was like the really shitty Fox anime block, would do their own dubs and edits, lot of edits. And it really fucked the whole like perception to the American audience of it, because it's similar to like when Disney really fucked up My Neighbor Totoro or one of the other or Nazca. It was Nazca. They fucked up Nazca so much that Miyazaki like was like,
Miyazaki had to fight so hard though. And I mean, it's like that time that he sent Weinstein the samurai sword and was like, you cut my movie, I fucking cut you.
Yes, and it was because of how fucking badly they fucked up Nazca. Like, and it's like, because they really bastardized a lot of anime in the 90s. Yeah, so it's like, it's always like, I had friends who were like, I don't like One Piece. It's babies. It's for babies.
No, and it's not.
Like, it's really not for babies, you guys.
And I mean, there's a lot. Oh my God, the emotions. Oh, the emotions, the friendship, the like, also lots of swearing and violence, but
yeah, there's,
you know,
blood and it's gore, cartoon but stuff. It was all edited out in the Fox Kids version. It was all edited
out. Oh, that's
out.
So lame. Yeah, so they call someone a bastard every 10 seconds in this show. Okay, but I'm starting to see everything now, because I'm like, oh man, the way the pirates work. Mm. Like, oh, okay, so there's all of this, like, free enterprise going on. It's like, you know, I'm seeing like the market correlations. And I'm like, oh, that's okay. So like the bad guys, there's bad guys who are fancy lads. But then there's also bad guys who are just like laissez-faire kind of like libertarians.
Right, right. Like who, yeah, who are just, you know, doing things that take advantage and exploit other people, even though they're also, you know, the heroes are also pirates. They're also like sort of libertarian,
but they're
anarchists.
But yeah, that's it. It's like, it's like there's the overlap of like there are two groups that are outside of the system, and it's like, and it's like free market wackadoos, and then there are and then there are like egalitarian like Marxists.
Yeah, and you find out a lot, like the politics in One Piece, they only get more and more interesting. Like there's like deals made with like with the Marines and certain types of pirates.
Oh my god,
like,
I love
like
how the Marines just wear trucker hats that say Marines on them.
I love the Marine outfits. Yeah. They're great uniforms.
There's so many Halloween costumes.
It's like, oh, you know, it's so fun. The One Piece character designs are really fun. Like, you know, the classic critique of that is like he draws women like insane fucked up hourglasses, but
oh yeah.
It's like the one that's like the one thing people get on him about a lot.
Yeah, like Nami is Nami is like, I'm like, how are you alive right now?
It doesn't make any sense.
And then yeah, there's like also he's just, they draw hands really weird. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
In there's in different scenes, it's like someone's hands will just turn into weird blobs for a couple of frames.
Yeah, hands and feet. I mean, one, like Luffy is made out of gum, but
yeah,
so
that's excusable. Yeah.
So that makes sense. But like every, like it's like hands and feet are like kind of gigantic in One Piece, and then yeah, when I was growing up, people who liked anime were kind of turned off by the style, because I think people liked, when I was a kid, like that really like anime eye, like,
oh god,
cute look. And it's like, it's I think it's such a unique style for anime, and I think it's really cool that it's like one of the most popular ever, because it's
just really descriptive. Cool. Like yeah, the way that all of the characters are presented, I can get an understanding of like how they actually, what like what they're corresponding to, instead of it just being like, oh, this style is about anime. It's like, oh, this is a style that's relating back to like the distillation of the person that it's.
Oh, and you know what? I think I have an extra color walk, which is like the art books of that collect the, like the author of the manga is named Ichiro Oda, and he like does these color spreads like every month or so, that are all like, you know, kind of like that Copic marker, hand colored.
Oh, amazing.
And they're so nice. And like, I think I have an extra one I'll bring you next time I see you.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. They're really, cause they're really nice. Like his like actual like hand colored, like hand drawn, spread, they're called color spreads, are super, super detailed and cool, and like they're really imaginative. It's always like the character is like with a bunch of animals like hanging out at like and eating ice cream, or like just like stupid, like they're
something
all in
like a delightful fantasy, yeah. Time,
yeah, like they're all in like modern day, or like they're all like in like Sentai outfits, or like they're all like, it's just like, it's just them in like a different, like in different settings, like that are not like the One Piece setting.
Sounds good. Sounds like it's all cool. Of the Rick and Morty fan art that I usually look at. I always go to their website and I check their, they have like a portal,
oh
that
God,
you can upload fan art into. I've never done it. Maybe I should.
I think you should.
I mean, it's a big step to take, to like, it's like I've made Rick and Morty fan art, but do I want to share it? I don't know. I'm scared.
I think you need to, dude. Like, oh my god, I could like debate about fan art for a long time. This is something I talk about with my friends sometimes, because like when you're making like zines and comics, a lot of people like make fan art and get like huge followings making fan art. And
yeah, it's so crazy.
And then they're able to like kind of pivot to do their own thing. And it's like kind of like nuts to think about, like literally like probably the most popular animated show on Netflix right now, like original, is the She-Ra show.
Oh yeah.
So that artist fucking used to just do like really like stupid, like bitty, tiny drawings of like the Avengers and shit.
Like, jeez.
Like and like it was like so like one time I helped my friend table the Micah student table at SPX, and because I was just hanging out and she needed help, and so I but everybody who was like coming to the table was asking for her artwork. Like everybody was like, I need this stupid little bitty Avengers art. I need it. You know?
Oh man, that, yeah, it's like the humble beginnings, they end up being the most valuable.
Yeah, but it's like it makes, I don't like, well, like I think it makes a lot of sense to like, you know, whatever, make fan art, like get an audience, and then you get a huge, like then you're able to like make your own art and you have an already have an audience, and like you don't have to make stupid bitty fan art anymore.
It's just reminding me of all of the models of like, you know, when you go, you're a band and you gotta like play the hits at the bar, and then nobody wants to hear your music. They're just like, play the Rolling Stones again, damn it. Yes, it's like, okay.
Like, and I have a lot of friends, you know, who are very like, have a lot of integrity about making art, and I of course respect that probably more, but I'm like kind of a both sides are on the issue. I don't know.
I just want to have like one of those lives where I can make a drawing of a thing because I really love it, and then it's like, oh, that's all right. You also, you know, maybe it's a TV show, but maybe it's something you made up. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, it's like it's annoying to have like people feel like almost like competitive about like audience sizes or something, when that just comes from like insecurities in different ways. Like it's like if everyone was taken care of, I don't think these like audience sizes would matter that much. But I guess a lot of people like to like, I want to be famous or something. I don't know.
Well, I think, I mean, audience does directly relate back to the ability to like accrue capital, and that's
exactly
yeah. So I mean, I get how real the stakes are.
Social capital.
Yeah,
right.
It's almost like it's infused into everything.
Because okay, so that actually segues to like some of the topics that we were going to go into today. Because like,
yes,
I've been like kind of obsessed.
Seamless.
Oh, we're really
seamless.
Good. We are on it. I've had two cups of coffee.
Oh damn! I've just been laying in bed watching One Piece.
That rocks, dude. That's like my oh my god. I watched an anime recently too called Gatchaman Crowds, which is but the same director who did that other anime C that Emily, friend of the show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Told us to, or told me, or told the Discord to watch, I guess. And
told us all
to check out, because it's about the financial crisis, and it just like turns them into Digimon fights. Like it's really interesting. Like the guy, the director, I feel like is like kind of obsessed with like critiques of capitalism, but like is stuck in like this weird like technocratic brain about it, which is really annoying. But sorry, that was like total tangent.
No, I mean it's just it's reminding me of something else though. If you want to go on a little rambling walk,
yeah, let's go.
All right, so I was thinking of like the way that all of these animes like they deal with capitalism in some sense. It's like there always is a magical element that is the thing that actually gets you to a point of like defeating whatever forces there are. And I started thinking about this actually watching it's a Korean movie, but it's like Psychokinesis. It's by the same director who did Train to Busan.
Oh cool.
Yeah, oh my god, it's such a great movie. So it's a little out of the realm, but it's very goofy, and it has the same like mechanics as anime where the actors are, you know, it's like, oh, the person who has psychokinesis can like fly and can like, you know, can like bounce off of things and is just like all he's wonderful and magical, and his job in the movie is to stop evictions.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
This movie is about evictions, and it's about like capital backed police teams destroying people's homes and livelihoods, and they actually form a strike and like a picket.
Wait, and now that like, you're talking about this, I think Michael DeForge is going to stream this movie soon.
Oh,
he
amazing.
Because he was talking about doing like a fuck landlords movie stream night, and I think this one is
oh yeah, this is a grade A fuck landlords movie. But the one thing I won't like spoil, it's just like it really fits into this whole like, oh, magic is what is needed to actually fight the cops because they have so much more than all of us, and they just keep terrorizing everybody. But magic, you guys.
But
whatever,
if we had
it is,
magic, we could take on the state or something like that.
We just need, well, the magic.
That's exactly, it's funny you say that. Yeah, that is exactly what happened in Gatchaman Crowds. That is exactly how it worked.
And like, it leaves it open for everybody. It's like, oh, if you can imagine, it's not like, we can't tell you how to win. We don't know how to win. But we know everything that isn't working. And then this magical element is like that space where Marx decided not to describe anything that would happen, like, you know, what full communism would look like or something, you
right. know? Yeah, well, with Gatchaman Crowds too, it annoyed me because it kind of had this like idealistic democratic socialist sort of, or like social democrat sort of vibe to it, where like the police and the firefighters and the National Guard were all working together to try to fight, you know, all the public servants, like all the publics, like literally like all, like that was like a main thing. And the prime minister all came together with this magic power, and all the people, everybody. It was like, it didn't have like, it wasn't like as antagonistic. It had a separate villain.
That's so annoying. It's like, there's the kind of, this very liberal sort of, people will all work together against aliens.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
It's like, well, great. I mean, our problem is other people.
Right. Yeah, so that annoyed me about Gatchaman Crowds, which was, I liked C better, because C was about, like, actual people. Like capitalists and
struggling,
and it was more of a struggle, even though it was abstracted into Digimon battles.
Well, that's the thing I can really get into. It's like, oh, I understand that, like, the and that it's magic is just the thing that sets in for like the unknown yet inevitable way that we will end up fighting these forces, and like we have to believe that there is something on the other side, or we have to believe that like something will protect us. And like, we know that, you know, since we don't have nearly as much resources, it's like, that's the entertaining part, is like, well, what if we did? What if the resource was us?
Right.
And we actually somehow magically, when we come together, we grow like a tulpa outside of ourselves. And this is like the magic that we can't anticipate, because it comes out of connection.
Yes. What's neat about One Piece is it's so long, but it never really drags, because every time they go to a new island, it's like a completely different thing. And like, you learn like how this island works or how this island works, which you haven't really gotten to that part yet, but you'll see. And then like all the different like sort of fleets, they all have like the chance to have this type of power, these types of powers through the devil fruits. Right. So it's about Luffy slowly building to have a power that can match these other powers. yeah. sort of like people through gaining people.
And then yeah. And it's definitely, it's like the devil fruit thing might be just some kind, the devil fruit thing seems like, I don't know, like a self-esteem thing, actually. Like if it was gonna break down into a real world equivalent, it's not that it's like, oh, well, there are people who are just magically overpowered in real life. It's like, no, Luffy believes in himself for like no reason other than he made a promise to his mentor as a kid.
Like the thing with his devil fruit is it could have been like a weak devil fruit. It could have been like just an annoying power that, but he found a way to like hone it and like make it more powerful.
Yeah. It's
not necessarily like a power up that he got magically. He actually had to build it.
Yeah. Otherwise he would just suffer being a rubbery boy.
And who can't swim?
Who can't swim? Oh my god, and Chop Chop.
Chopper? You get the Chopper already? Or
I saw, yes.
Okay.
And now I know. Now I know who's on your keychain.
No, my key.
Oh my gosh, the Chop Chop clown guy. Oh, he's crazy.
Oh, no, no, no. That, you're getting confused. That's Bone Clay.
Oh, Bone Clay?
Yeah, that's Bone Clay.
Well, he calls him, he's like, I ate a Chop Chop fruit.
Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, he has no, he doesn't have the Chop Chop powers. That's Buggy. Buggy yeah, has Buggy. Chop Chop. Buggy has Chop Chop powers.
Wait, which keychain do you have?
I have Bone Clay and Ivankov, and you haven't gotten to either of them yet.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I haven't gotten there. I thought you had a Buggy thing.
I like Buggy, but Buggy's like, yeah, Buggy's funny.
Buggy's crazy.
But yeah, yeah, it's there's clownish. They're both clownish. So
oh yeah, okay. I've got to differentiate my clown pirates.
And then there is a main character like literally named Chopper who you haven't met yet. But
whoa,
you know, yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of chopping in this show. It's hard to keep all of the swordmen straight.
Yeah, it's a lot. I can't believe you're embarking on.
I know. I was like, a lot of people have swords for fingers too,
and swords in their mouth, and swords, just swords.
Yeah, swords and swords. And Zoro is like Goemon and Jigen like got fused together.
Yeah, really. Like absolutely. Yeah, there's a more Jigen. Character later too, you'll see.
Ooh, like a gunman?
Not real. I mean,
does he smoke cigarettes?
Yes, yes. There's a character who smokes cigarettes.
All right. Well, now instead of Lupin Corner, we're gonna just have One Piece Corner.
I'm so excited. I'm gonna ask you about everything. Cause I get to relive it because it's like the early ones. It's been. Like so much happens, you have no idea. It's so long.
I know. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the road ahead, and it's like, all right, we're gonna take it as it goes.
Like the arc that is on right now, it's like the second to last, probably. That's like what people are saying. It's like probably the second to last, unless he adds some other stuff, but which is kind of nuts because it's been going for like I don't know, like 20 years.
Yeah, that's super emotional. That's like, hey guys, no more Simpsons.
That's gonna be great. Won't that happen? Well, that should happen.
Should happen.
But what I was saying before too about social capital, I want to go back to.
Oh yeah, let's look back in there.
The show is what we want to talk about. Sort of is like these like debates going on online about like. I think it's really fascinating that there's constantly these rehashings of cancel culture. And I know it's a stupid fucking thing to always go back on, but it's, you know, it's kind of out of our hands. It keeps fucking reentering the discourse. And like the reason talking about social capital made me think of it is that like it's always these discussions about clout.
Mm-hmm.
And clout chasing like meaning that like criticism can't be real because people are just doing it to get their name out there or something.
Yeah, it's like it's like the postmodern hell of appropriation where everybody just thinks that any mention of anything is appropriation and that it has to be fought against. So now,
my God,
now yep. it's just like, oh Lord, we're going to just destroy ourselves in here.
It's so wild. Cause it like, it just, it goes into, it becomes this, such an abstract debate that it gets into like really annoying circular logics that drive me insane.
Yeah. And it, yeah, there's no way to fight it. There's absolutely no way out of someone who is like so deeply entrenched, like arguing with you about their point that you're actually wrong and deserve to not be on Twitter. It's like
or that you shouldn't be critical either. Like it's because it's like it's both. It's like because I'm always obsessed with Glenn Greenwald's weird takes about these things, because he gets really heated about it, and sometimes it's just like, dude, log off. Like, oh, this yeah. is like so silly.
He's got to get grill pilled.
Like, it's so bizarre. Like, because it's like him and then Taibbi now, and then like Taibbi going on Chapo with that like really bad episode, which we saw coming, by the way.
I know. Well, we're just not in the middle of that their little like power structure thing, so you can see it easier from the outside.
Yes, you really can, because like yeah, because you don't feel like you're like defending your good friend or something, because that's like a lot of what it is, and they need to recognize that that's a lot of what it is.
Yeah, you guys, my friend is not an abuser. Is like, it's a beautiful thing, beautiful refrain I hear. You know, yeah, it's yeah. from Hollywood to what's the podcast world called?
I don't know.
Oh, we don't have a name for it. To the podsphere.
Podsphere, yeah, that's fine. That works.
Yeah, from Hollywood to the podsphere, we hear the classic refrain, my friend is not an abuser.
It's so frustrating, or like my friend like can't be wrong. Like I can appreciate Chapo. I really can. I can appreciate it. But what I really get annoyed by them is like how uncritical they are. How like they never really push back on each other's stuff or the guests. Like,
well, it's not like a self-crit thing. They're just critical of Capital.
Right. Which is like good, and I think is yeah. good. But then it's like if you have someone coming on the show whose take is maybe like like literally like a sort of like not all cops, like in a whole episode kind of dedicated to like the not all cops, and it's like just that perspective, that's like so bizarre to me.
I mean I tried just to like stay out of those areas of thought, because ultimately it's like, yeah, I mean technically I will never be an essentialist,
right?
So by nature that actually means I have to agree not all cops, and right. and but it's a complicated philosophical position, which I don't want anybody to misconstrue as me thinking I anything, because also like ACAB is also true,
right? That's the thing, and I knew that was coming, because yeah, because it is a big systemic critique, and like the thing with that episode was it just like it got so off the rails. Like they were talking about like how like they were going right into the right wing culture war, which is kind of what we first saw them doing, when they're like, oh, now people are learning different histories than other people. And it's like, yeah, people are like raised in different states with like entirely different curriculums, and like none of this shit has ever been standardized. Like,
right. I mean, it's sort of interesting the way that everybody's like brains are melting over the concept of a culture war when in our kind of our makeup of a national identity, it facilitates this ongoing structural
right.
Conversation, you know,
it's like been this way.
Yeah. It's always like, I was like learning more about, you know, the fights of like how to separate church and state and just how many people have like thrown themselves into like, you know, getting the Pledge of Allegiance to be changed and how to, you know, like how to change everything on these root levels that ultimately the state will like reinforce in opposition. They'll be like, oh no, in all public schools, we're going to make everybody like salute the flag and then also pledge allegiance and be under God. And whose God is it? Well, it's this one Christian God that we keep talking about. No, but also, guys, we made our country separate. And then, and it's like, our leadership builds this in to like the education system. So like how do we blame someone for continuing on thinking this way?
Right. Ugh. And it's just, and it's just so frustrating because like then you get pushback for like the episode, you know, having some really weird takes, and like instead it becomes a big, then like Taibbi turns it into like a big debate about cancel culture and like having the wrong opinion and I've been crucified and like,
yes,
Jesus fucking Christ, can you get literal, a grip?
Literal Jesus. Like, please.
My I'm Lord, one God, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, Jesus, you know, he wasn't God until he died and then the spirit of Christ went in him. Okay, so everybody relax, he was just a communist.
And like to go back to like the not all cops question, whatever, like to me that would look like the ones that quit when they saw how bad things were, the ones that like I really do feel for like the people who join the cops or join the army, like thinking, just needing any job because of whatever their financial situation. Like, I do genuinely feel that. And like, I really appreciate this one journalist was asking cops, like, hey, if you could get paid the same amount for what you're doing, just like coaching, coaching kids. Like, I guess I've brought this up on the show before. Would you do it? And they're like, yeah, of course. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So it's like we could pay them to do shit like that. And that like actually helps prevent crime, is to like have kids be doing other activities.
Like, yes. And that's the thing. It's like, do I think that the way that the system is using law enforcement is horrific and terrifying and absolutely needs to end? Yes. Do I think that the people who are stuck inside of the system are inherently evil? No.
That's not how evil works. Evil.
Yeah, that's not. I mean, I read too much Hannah Arendt to think that, you know.
I'm not for disposability culture either, and I'm a prison abolitionist, so all of these things have to be fucking squared, circled, whatever. Like
all of them have to have shapes.
All of them have to have little marks around them about where they're going to go or whatever in my planned economy when I'm the communist dictator.
Oh, yes. Of course. Lead us to the promised land.
I'm just kidding. But
I know. But that is the way that most people go about things when they're like, oh, listen. Obviously,
I'm cracking my knuckles. Right,
I should have power so that I can do this better than you, you dumb government.
But that's the thing. I'm against disposability culture. I'm against the death penalty unless it's for the ruling class. I am for the death penalty towards the ruling class. I am.
Oh yeah. There is a one true evil in this world, and I think we can all agree it is the warmongering ruling class. If anybody's doing a thing for a paycheck, well, their soul has to be weighed against a feather at the end of time.
And I'm fucking fine with like, you know, if the cops are threatening people's lives, they like are, it's self-defense. Kill a cop. Fine. Like, that's fine with me too. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, there has to be rehabilitation. There has to be a rehabilitation you process. There has to be accountability process.
That used to be the way that the law worked in like the turn of the 1900s. There were all these little cases where it would be like, oh, you killed a cult leader because he defiled your sister. All right, well, you're not guilty.
You're not guilty.
That guy deserved it. He was really mean to your sister. Now go home and make sure everything's okay.
that makes a lot more sense. But, you know, then the prison industrial complex came around and, like, state budgets are like, completely dependent on, like, you know.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe Biden.
Love you, Joe. Not going to vote for you.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Can't do it. Won't do it. Sorry.
Absolutely not. No.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my God. I can't stand harm reductionists who are like, you guys, no, it's going to be okay. If we vote for Joe Biden, then we'll fix things. It's like, no, that's actually not that. He literally built the system that we are dealing with now. Why would he be, and he wants to pack his he wants to pack his White House with Republicans and with capitalists. Like, what about that would be any different than what we're dealing with now?
We can have the harm reduction argument all fucking day, honestly, about like all of it. Like, about like the idea of voting at all. Like, you know, it's really not gonna, you know.
Well, I just think like local and statewide elections that's are where still I've landed. Crucially important, and yeah,
right. I mean, of course, that's where I've landed. But like, I'm just saying, like, the idea of harm reduction is so like eye of the beholder. It's like, ask somebody like from Honduras how the Obama administration was for them. You know, like,
exactly. Or even ask people that were in Michigan.
Right.
Like, you don't even have to leave the country to see who is being left behind. Like, I mean, yeah.
Horrendous. They're horrendous. Yeah. Like,
our listeners know this.
Yeah, well, just in case we've gotten some newbies. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Position has not changed despite the pandemic making pressure cookers even higher or whatever.
Yeah, I'm just really sticking to my guns. Like, a friend was saying, oh, what if you know, because of the pandemic and how many lives like Black and brown lives were disproportionately affected by the COVID deaths, like, would it mean that like there would be less votes for Biden? And I was like, I'm sorry, I cannot
do that.
I can't even game this out, because, like, okay, first of all, does that mean all white people vote for Trump? No. Second of all, who the fuck even wants to vote at all? Because this election, like, we didn't even get to choose our candidates.
Oh, it's so fraudulent. I don't know. Do we have time to even go on the tangent about the fucking BOE in New York City? It's awful.
Oh, God.
It's awful.
It's bad. Folks, it's bad.
I'll link to the Gothamist piece about the lawsuit about against Cuomo and the BOE, because it's horrendous.
Yes.
Please. My God.
Just stop fetishizing this leadership.
Ugh, so mad. I got the RT from Julia Salazar about it.
Oh, good.
We're friends again. We squashed the beef.
Oh yeah. Oh, we were always destined to be buds. just a little light fight about loft laws is all it took.
God, yeah. I was tweeting with the AP Andy from Antifada, apparently there was a different rep, like Democratic Socialist rep, who was like doing some weird shady things with landlords to like or not landlords but developers. And I'm like, who is the second one now?
Oh, like, my God.
What happened?
It's almost like everybody wants to find that middle of the road answer.
Fuck.
Yeah. No, it's bad. It's bad.
Don't work with developers. Jesus.
Yeah. I can't help anyone. I don't know about them.
Sorry, I've gotten very catty on this episode.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm sick of the fucking constant fucking hand-wringing about cancel culture and shit from the left. Meanwhile, this like Barry Weiss, New York Times letter, like neoliberal garbage people like signed this letter about it. And it's just like, you listen to the left talk about it, and it's like, why didn't you fuckers sign this letter? You're like David Brooks right now.
I have, okay, so I think this is a good time to bring in a couple paragraphs of TJ Clark.
Okay.
Okay, so this is like, I don't know, this helped me a lot to understand something about the way we have these symbolic fights. And yeah. I hope that it kind of like opens up a new way of looking at all this cancel culture stuff for you and the listeners too. But it's like a couple paragraphs from The Painting of Modern Life by TJ Clark, who is an awesome Marxist critic of all art history. He's done work on like the politics of spectacle, and he's gone into like the art of the 1800s when industrialization was going on and like how people sort of form their consciousness around that.
I don't understand why more Marxists don't read spectacle theory stuff.
Well, here is actually the reason why.
Yes, and, tell me.
Okay, so I'm going to read it and then we'll get into that specific question. Okay. It sounds right. It corresponds to normal usage to say that any social order consists primarily of classifications. What else do we usually mean by the word society but a set of means for solidarity, distance, belonging, and exclusion? These things are needed preeminently to enable the production of material life, to fix an order in which men and women can make their living and have some confidence that they will continue to do so. Orders of this sort appear to be established most potently by representations or systems of signs, and it does not seem to me to trivialize the concept of social formation or necessarily to give it an idealist as opposed to a materialist gloss, to describe it as a hierarchy of representations. That way, one avoids the worst pitfalls of vulgar Marxism, in particular, the difficulties involved in claiming that the base of any social formation is some brute facticity made of sterner and solider stuff than signs, for instance, the stuff of economic life.
Damn.
It is one thing and still necessary to insist on the determinant weight in society of those arrangements we call economic. It is another to believe that in doing so, we have poked through the texture of signs and conventions to the bedrock of matter and action upon it. Economic life, the economy, the economic realm, sphere, level, instance, what have you, is in itself a realm of representations. How else are we to characterize money, for instance, or the commodity form, or the wage contract? I believe it is possible to put this kind of stress on representation and remain, as I want to, within the orbit of historical materialism. Everything depends on how we picture the links between any one set of representations and the totality which Marx called social practice.
Yo. That did answer a lot of my question.
Dude, right?
Yeah.
It was like, oh my God, this is so healing, because it's like, for everyone who thinks that this battle is bullshit, it's like, no, representation is everything because we have language and it's human.
Right. Like, and I think like, if I'm interpreting correctly, it's like a lot of people put a lot of stake in these quote, like economic processes. But then there are these other processes that have a very similar characteristic. That like it's hard to gauge how much weight they have or something, but like should not be discounted in the way that like a maybe a super I don't know I want to say like orthodox Marxist or something would be like only these type of workers can do anything or something.
Yeah, I think that this passage really gets at the class reduction that has been going on, where everyone is like, oh, well, who cares? You're all working so hard to represent yourselves. Like, you all are trying to have your own cultures, and you're all trying to cancel each other's cultures. But the real fact of the matter is we're working class. And it's like, no, buddy, the working class struggle is built out of all of these fights of representation. Like,
also, we've brought this up before, but like the term proletariat is so useful here because it encompasses all facets of the working class, says with an S. It's not an either or thing. It's like, and we can talk about like the PMCs or the petite bourgeois all we want, but the proletariat encompasses everybody else versus the ruling class, right?
Yes. Yes, it's all of us, and we just have to get along with our goddamn cultural signifiers.
Jesus Christ, yeah, seriously. And there are all these categories are helpful, but
well, it's funny too, because you know, the way that this text goes, it's like money is also a signifier. Money is there, because it's like, if you want to be a class reductionist, that's like you're saying you know, that somehow your economic status is like is the essential part of you.
Yes, and it's stagnant. And it's that's what pisses me off with these sort of class reductions, and specifically like Amber from Chapo. It pisses me off a lot because like I know a lot of people like that who like are from a working class background in wherever the fuck Indiana. But then the fact that you go to fucking NYU or whatever and like then become a professor, you've transcended your class, your original class position. You moved class positions or whatever.
And that's something we should all be able to do. And
yeah.
We shouldn't be practicing a politics of resentment where all of a sudden your friend is not your comrade anymore if they get a nice job that enables them to support their family. You know?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. It's like it's like punk cred or something. Like, I totally hate that shit.
Totally.
Like, people change. Like, I don't know. I know my parents changed class positions like several times.
Yeah. I mean, I pray that we all will.
But yeah, I mean, I think with my family, we went backwards, slept backwards for a bit, and then picked back up again.
Oh God.
But
oh, never mind. No backwards. Onwards and upwards, soldiers.
I mean, there's a lot of what like Chapo people speak to are the downwardly mobile or whatever.
Yeah. It's a lot of us, it's millions of people everywhere who are pissed off.
Did you see Obama be like, bring up like, I forget what he was comparing it to, but he was like, yeah, it's like your starter home.
Oh God.
People are like, what the fuck are you talking about?
A starter home? Are you kidding? Oh, that's the place where you put all of your really nice chaise lounges, right? Jesus, the fuck is a home?
Fuck you. Like, it's so frustrating because they're speaking to their base, because like that's what's so frustrating is like they don't have to speak to the majority of people because like they've got the whole system rigged so that they only have to speak to this certain set of psychos, like the type of psychos who are super into Cuomo. We're all like people who like left the city during Corona to their second homes. Like, that's who decide elections in this country. It sucks.
It's yeah, it is. It's terrible. I mean, that was one thing that I kind of realized about all of this like political podcast, like dissecting what all of these, I was like, I don't know, I had a weird crisis where it was like, what is this for? Why are we dissecting policies and describing what kind of like terrible things come out of it when it's like, I fucking know because I'm on the ass end of it. And then I realized, oh, all of this analysis is all for liberal, like liberal bourgeois
listeners. The two liberal sects that decide.
Yeah. It's like, we hope that, and that's why you're never going to see Chapo become self-critical or start to change their language, because they are trying to reach people who are those voting blocks.
They're consciously or unconsciously, because I think they would try to do the Daily Show thing where they're like, we're just comedians or whatever.
Well, they are doing that though. They they literally are doing that. They're like, we're just comedians, but we're edgy because we say socialism more. And it's like, and it's fine, because I think it, to me, it works. And I just realized that the audience is not necessarily like, I mean, we can get a rise out of hearing our realities reflected back to us, but the way that it's reflected, I think also is in some way to get to the New York Times listener or reader, you know, like to get to those people who would otherwise be comfortable with like, oh, that bill sounds good. I don't understand. What's the problem?
Yes, and that's what I've realized too about like Glenn Greenwald as well, because he's very similar. Like when I watch him talk about this stuff on his show, his Intercept show on YouTube, it's a lot more nuanced. It's a lot better than how he presents himself online. But like it's still incredibly frustrating, because he's speaking to these elites, and he's criticizing media and he's criticizing these elite media institutions. But like, to me, as like just like a listener of his and who I see how influential he is, I'm like, can't you apply any of that criticism back on yourself, like even a little bit?
Hopefully, at least at
I think he does on his show a little bit more than he does online, but
it's just hard for people because they don't want to lose the authority that gets them the audience to begin with.
Right. Yeah, you gotta
because then they got nothing.
Right. I don't know. Then they still have a million followers on Twitter or whatever. Well,
but then they start to lose those followers. Yeah. You know what I mean? The followers are there because they want to, like, either they want to challenge someone who believes that they have the correct take, or they want to just pay attention to someone who's doing thinking for them.
Yeah. It's so weird for me to think about, because like, I'm like pretty set with just making like I've lived like a really good life for a long time on like $500 a month, you know? Like,
I mean, but you have a very specific case where you don't really live on $500 a month. You live on the community who is around you and the things that they also do, which other people don't necessarily have. So, you know, it's
no, that's true. It's good to take stock of that, those things. But I'm at a certain point, I'm like, I wish that these lefty media people could just feel comfortable in their position and actually, like, I don't know, just have a little more confidence that like the listeners aren't gonna fucking cancel you. Like, it's not that type of thing. I don't know.
I just don't want anything from them. I don't want them to do anything. I don't want anyone to change. I just see them and I'm like, oh, you guys are talking about that. Okay. But it's just, that's just for me. I like don't, I'm not like concerned with their realm, because I've just like, oh, it's so easy to turn this off.
No, that's true. That's true. And sometimes you do just need to log off, and it's not a big deal. And it's kind of, it gets built up into bigger things. I would just love to see like a more, it doesn't even have to be from them or anybody. Like, what I like about our show even is like, you're trying to actually figure things out. It's not just like, you don't just run into nihilist walls. I hate seeing people run into nihilist walls. That's my main thing, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things that actually like led me to the TJ Clark writing, because I realized like the way that Matt Chrisman was working out his line of inquiry around like spectacle politics, and how we had to stop debating certain things and start like truly authentically living somehow by participating in these activities that are not like in the communicative sphere of online politics. I was like, you know what? You know, I hear the frustration there and I can relate to it. And I listened to Matt Chrisman because I think he is a really excellent historian and I learn a lot from him, but this was one of the areas that I knew was like falling into my expertise of like, no, homie, this is, first of all, this is America and we are the capital of spectacle. So if you think you're going to divorce individuals from their stake in this show, like you got another thing coming, because your fucking grill pill thing has been absorbed.
Yes, it really has.
So like, I would love to have a discussion about that at some point, whether he knows or not that he is like also falling into the trap.
But I think he does know. I think I remember him going on a thing where he's just like, and yeah, and like it's like, I feel like he knows, but I don't think he knows what to like to really think about it or something.
Well, it's just that, I mean, this is what I've come to is like, it's too horrific to really contemplate the way that we are intrinsically tied to the ways of perception that we're capable of, and that like the limitation of our power to act is like not commensurate with the things we want to do. Like we want, and I believe it. I believe everyone on the left, everyone who joins every kind of organization, everyone who makes every kind of salty post, everyone who is just in their workplace putting chewing gum in the credit card machines so that things don't fucking work. Like everyone wants a revolution, and our limitations in trying to figure out how to get there is insane. So if somebody just goes like, why don't we log off and try authentic life for a while? Like we're becoming primitivists or something.
Way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, all right, well, that's one way to express your feelings, which is that you want a greater solidarity than we feel capable of. But another way is like saying, you know, we are all unified. We're just working up to a goal that is like,
I think it comes back to what we were talking about before, right? With the superpowers or whatever, like with anime, with because people are afraid, and because they know the apparatus we're up against, they do get it. Like people do get it. Like there actually is like a pretty high level of consciousness happening. There's just not I don't know how to put it. We haven't awakened like a power that we feel brave enough to go with a strategy, to go with a particular strategy against the state or the ruling class.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it, right? We figured it out.
We're just building still.
Yeah, we figured it out. We synthesized our thoughts about anime and cancel culture.
Damn, yeah, we're good. Seamless transitions. Get into it, homies.
It doesn't. Yeah, it's actually really nice to have this episode, because I was sort of flagellating myself for just like sitting around and watching anime, which I think to a certain extent is justified. I'm just in a weird rut, and it's been hard for me to just get out there and do shit. So I just stay home and watch anime, but it can help me think through some stuff too. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know either. All I know is I'm really happy to have work even when it makes me tired, because I'm not very good at living off of no money or sitting around. So
I make my own work. It is what it is. I'm working on a cookbook.
Oh, amazing. Oh my God.
Trying to do some sort of zine or working on the stream. We did a test one that was pretty fun. But
oh, yeah. I'm not sure what to do with it. Should we otherwise. Do a little wrap up of updates?
Yeah. How is everything going with you? I feel like that's all I had to say.
Oh, no. I want to hear about what did you guys do on the stream?
Oh, well, we just like tested it out because it's like there's all these different programs, and then seeing like if the computer can actually handle the stream, and then like seeing like how to do different things simultaneously, like how to look at each other, listen to each other simultaneously, and then like have it on the stream, and like how to display all the graphics in a way that makes sense. And like, so we were just like watching YouTube videos and catching up, basically.
Oh, nice. Well, that sounds super chill.
Yeah.
Sounds like the stream has achieved super chillness.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's not great. Like, it's still kind of like, there's a lot of technical aspects to it that I don't quite understand, but I'm learning the program. It's called OBS. It's like an open source broadcasting program.
Cool.
But yeah, you and I should do a test of a stream of just a chill hangout Snackcast or something.
Oh yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, I think it'd be a really good way to do Snackcast.
Yeah, super into it. Super, super down to Snackcast stream. And then we can like show the snacks too.
True. Yes, exactly.
It's like pretty crucial.
Big part.
Constructing the reel is going good. I've been having some meetings with people about ways that we can structure, like, and so a lot, I've just been having a lot of kind of behind the scenes stuff, and we're working on a way to partner with Space Oddities, which is the Witch Store in Chicago.
Cool.
So that they could like, you know, carry books that we'd be reading in the group, and then that we would like direct people to their online space, and it would like help them you know, stay afloat. And then they also have, you know, like tarot courses and courses about like queering witchcraft, because so much of the field is like, you know, oh, this white girl on TikTok, you know,
curse the moon or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And people think that it's that, but really there's so many like different modes of magic from all around the world and throughout history that it's like, oh, please, let's get there.
Cool.
So it's like trying to work out stuff to go more into occult studies. I have like a course like that. I think, yeah, we have some artist talks that are in the works. So yeah, we're starting to branch out into different ways of constructing the reel, not just theory. So it's a little more friendly for everybody. Who doesn't necessarily want to get into the heady stuff.
That's great. Love that.
So, yeah. And I think eventually once we all figure out how to like kind of work together, we'll be able to start like having a zine shop or something, you know, like having a space for everybody to kind of share what they're making, what they're building, like, you know, if you got a t-shirt that you want to share with people, if you got somebody who's making face masks, you know, whatever, you making a little thing, you want to share it, we'll have space for that.
It's sort of like a distro. You're sort of building it out into a distro, which is that's really cool. That makes sense.
Yeah, trying. It's all still. It's not like in the visible stages yet. It's all just a lot of conversations of like how the flow would work.
Mm. Well, that's all great. Hell yeah, dude. I'll put my cookbook out with it.
Oh my god, please. Please do. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, we're just gonna do a PDF release of it. But I could also do physical ones.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, we can make people Venmo you $1 for the PDF.
For the PDF. Yeah, that's how we're, because Carissa's doing some too. Me and Carissa both been doing a lot of cooking.
Oh yeah. I like your posts of fresh produce.
There's so much because we get a CSA every week. There's so much that I have to cook all the time to use it all. It's great.
Yeah, I really like how the challenge that you've been given.
It's like a chopped box, yeah. Because you don't know what it's going to be each time, too. It's not the same vegetables every time.
Oh, ooh. Yeah, it is like a, yeah, gosh. Today's challenge, you have to deal with this oddly shaped tomato.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, legit. Like, we got a yellow watermelon. It's cool.
Does it taste different?
I'd say it tastes slightly different. Yeah. Yeah. I can't quite put my finger on how it's. I feel like maybe the red ones are like a little like slushier in texture.
Oh, that makes sense.
Something, but otherwise pretty similar.
So you heard it here. The yellow tastes like yellow. The red tastes like red.
It tastes like red. Yeah. Oh well, good ep. I guess we'll wrap up here then. Catch us on Patreon if you like our show.
Oh yeah,
nice.
Donate some of your monies.
I mean, if you have it, I know maybe half the people in the United States have money right now.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, but if you got some...
You could do worse than us. We're pretty good. I don't know.
We're all right. You know, we keep alive. Keep putting out content.
Yeah, it's a pretty good synthesis. Last week and this week, I think.
Yeah, we're back on it, guys. No more depressing stuff. I heard that we were depressing people before. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was, and I still am, extremely depressed about the state murdering all those people. But it's just the way it is.
Yeah, but here we are. This is our job. We're keeping it upbeat, and we're doing it for you. Yeah. Inside, we're crumbling. Outside, we are just big old positive anime fans.
Yeah, gotta. Yeah, it really, it's helpful. Anime is very helpful when you're depressed.
Yeah, I found out. I'm there with you now.
Oh, I'm so glad we're gonna have a One Piece segment every week from now on. Sorry, guys.
One Piece 100 years.
OnePiece.com.
Yes.
Do a Rick and Morty. All right. Bye.
Bye. Let's have fun.
I get if you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy. It doesn't really matter if you drive a limousine. It really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck. I get if you just drive a limousine. It doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari. I really don't care because I just love your company. Let's have fun. 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 Lots of fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Let's have fun. Lots of fun.